For a short show. Anyway, Kathy has just put out the most gorgeous book called Mrs. Wheelbarrow's Practical Pantry. It is all about canning, but it takes you through so much more. She's talking about curing and brining and canning. It's more than jams and jellies, and we're going to get the 411 on this glorious book later in the show. Now, we have somebody who's been on the show quite a few times, and he has a huge reputation with him.
I think we should adopt him.
You want to adopt him?
Yeah.
He's got a bunch of kids. I don't know if I want to adopt him.
Well, he's got a lot of wine, too.
So. Jordan Harris, you know him from Terrera Winery. He is back in studio. There is so much going on with the winery, and they are gaining such an incredible reputation thanks to him. They have so many awards for their wines, and he's going to give us a little taste in studio today.
And if I say bourbon or whiskey or rye... Yeah, any of those brown waters.
Everybody, ears perk up yes, please.
A couple people just fell over. Probably talking Barrel, which is Capitol Hill's new go-to watering spot for the good hard stuff. Barrel's GM, Mike Haggis, is in with Parker Girard. Parker, you're a bartender, right?
Yes, that's correct.
A beartender. Okay, and we're going to talk about and taste some of the potables that I guess lubricate the hill and might account for its major dysfunction, don't you think?
I think that's fair.
Maybe they should be drinking more. Maybe they're not drinking enough.
Like it that way.
Yeah. All right, we would really appreciate it.
Let's start with you guys. People out there might know the difference between bourbon and whiskey and rye. What are the differences?
It's kind of like the difference between squares and rectangles, in that a square kind of is a rectangle.
Now, lost me already. I flunked you.
mostly composition, I would say. Bourbon has to be at least 51% corn. American rye, 51% rye. So really, it's a matter of composition, and you get different flavor notes from different styles.
All right. That was a wry comment. Thank you. all right.
Oh my God.
So, and what about the differences between a good one and a bad one? I mean, is there such a thing as a bad whiskey or a bad rye?
I've had a couple.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
the line
right would be like, well, your taste defines what's good or bad. Which I guess is a nice sentiment, and it works with a lot of, you know, drinks and food. But we've had some rough ones come through. I think, like, people are trying to push out products so fast now that you get a lot of underage whiskeys that are pretty harsh. They just don't have the complexity, even some of the bigger brands.
Would you say the bigger brands are trying to push them because there's all these craft artisan products out there now, or is it the reverse?
I would say it's the reverse, because I think the market is, like, exploding, whereas these artisans and craft people, like you said, can open distilleries like that, buy other people's liquid, age it maybe not as long as it should be, and put it out to market. And sometimes they're great and wonderful, and sometimes they're young and harsh. So we've had a couple rough ones.
I had some that were young and harsh. I remember that. Thank you. I think you were young and harsh once.
I was once.
You were. All right. So very quickly, Barrel, whose idea was that?
That would be our owners and the partners. I was working at Union Pub and a couple other Union Capitol Hill places that Matt Weiss owned. And he and the owners of previously 18th Amendment put it together and opened up Barrel.
All right.
Great. Well, what kind of cocktail are you making for us first this morning?
This is going to be the Bucket. This is a cocktail that we actually launched with when we opened the restaurant. It's been on the menu since day one.
Mm-hmm.
This is Elijah Craig 12, which is one of the best mixing bourbons. 12 years old. It's quite nice with some pepper ginger syrup and Bitterman's Burlesque bitters. Just to round it out. It's our house take on an old fashioned.
And what's the thing in the bottom?
That is a brandy soaked cherry.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty wonderful. A lot of it's basically a super maraschino cherry, essentially.
All right. Well, cheers, everybody.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Cheers, guys.
Okay.
All right. So while we're getting schlunkered, let's talk to George.
Hi, George.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Wait. We have to start from the beginning, because there was a big surprise this week, and we know we can't talk a lot about you're being on Top Chef, but just to catch everybody up, you were on the first episode. You got kicked off of the first episode.
Thanks for reminding
me. Did you have to say it that way?
Yeah, making
right?
A mistake.
They just opened the door and put a boot in you. And but you're back on.
Yeah.
What
surprise?
Happened?
I got a second chance. I had no idea that opportunity was coming.
Mm-hmm.
We show up in the kitchen and they tell us that. One of the chefs had a second chance, whoever had the most votes, and I was just praying that everybody would vote for me. And once I did have the most votes, I knew I wasn't going to blow it and take advantage of the opportunity.
So are you here to say that there is, in fact, life after death?
Absolutely, yeah.
You are the comeback king.
Always second chances.
Well, for those who don't know, let's talk about Capnos and a little bit of your background and how you wound up working with Mike Isabella.
Well, Capnos is a... It's like kind of like an inspiration of just like kind of doing different type of Greek cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like a lot of what people interpret as Greek cooking is very basic and the same food. And a lot of Greek restaurants, I feel like, kind of have like 75% of their menus are all kind of the same, like the small places I used to go to in New York. And so the idea behind it is to put our culinary take on Greek food, mm-hmm. and just kind of.
I think we should tell everybody that you grew up helping your father with his restaurant. I mean, you are Greek.
Yeah.
So did you need a lot of help in putting this out at Capnos?
Well, yeah. Well, like I've been born and raised into the restaurant business. I worked at my father's diner since I was a kid. And I just knew working there that this is what I wanted to do with my life. I went to college, got my business degree. I realized that going down that road wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. I ended up going to culinary school, to the CIA. And from there, I just kind of saw like this whole other world of cooking. And I got into the French game, like all the fine dining French restaurants in Manhattan. And going there is like where you really get your foundation and your cooking techniques and everything mm-hmm. like that. But eventually, like, I am Greek. You know, Greek is in my blood. That's the food I grew up on. When I was a kid, my parents used to send me to Greece every single summer and stay in the village with my grandparents and help them, you know, tend the farm and stuff like that.
So I guess you could say that Greece is the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You. I had to do it.
No, you didn't. You really didn't.
All right. So there you are, Capnos. You're happy. You're the executive chef. You're running it. And Isabella shows up and says, guess what? We're opening a restaurant in Arlington?
He's a partner, well, so it wasn't like a surprise.
My brother Nick and I are partners with Mike, so like every decision that we do, we kind of do together. And then so the opportunity came for us to go check out the space in Arlington, and we all loved it, so we decided to go ahead with it. And we're really excited about it. It's a beautiful space. It has like 30-foot ceilings. It has like a beautiful mezzanine.
But what's the difference between the Capnos concept and the Capnos Taverna concept?
Well, the Capnos concept right now is kind of like more focused on like spit roasted whole animals and like kind of like that northern Greek feel with like the earth tone colors and more like the landlocked areas of Greece. Whereas Capnos Taverna, we're going to kind of focus more on the coastal parts of Greece, and mm-hmm. we're going to feature a lot more seafood. We're going to go with like the shellfish towers. We're going to have like, stone crab, king crab and things like that in there. And
so there'll be no spit roasting.
There'll be one spit roaster at Capnos. We have two spit roasters where mm-hmm. we do whole animals and we do primal cuts with lamb shoulders and pork shoulders and whole chickens. But at Capnos Taverna, we're just going to just do lamb shoulders, pork shoulders and chicken. No whole animals.
No. Okay.
But if you want one, you call us ahead of time. We'll do it.
How many seats is the Capnos Taverna?
Capnos Taverna is going to be about 160 seats, just like Capnos.
So it is big.
Yeah, it's a big place.
I think people think because you call it a taverna that it's going to be sort of smaller and more intimate, but not the case.
Yeah, well, like, I guess taverna in Greece is kind of like the bistro in France. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. like when you want to go get like a nice home-cooked meal in France, you go to like the bistro and you get like beef bourguignon and steak frites and things like that. Whereas in Greece, when you want to go out, have like a nice family meal, you go to the taverna. Mm-hmm. And then at the taverna, there's always like, you know, Greek specialties, like the Greek home cooked meals and lamb and things like that. So that's kind of the idea behind that we wanted to do like a more casual type Capnos feel. Plus, we want each restaurant to kind of have their own identity. We don't want them just to be like carbon copies of each other.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of research did you do to sort of come up with the menu for the taverna?
Well,
I can't say it as pretty as you.
Get a roll of your
taverna.
Taverna. We spent a lot of time going out to eat at different restaurants, like going to checking out people that do like the nice shellfish seafood towers. And then for the main inspiration is going to Greece mm-hmm. and traveling around. My fiance and I, this past summer, we went all over the Peloponnesian Peninsula, all different parts of coastal Greece, like Limeni and Kalamata. And then we went over to Crete, and then we went to Chania, Heraklion, different mm-hmm. cities in Crete. And then we went to the island where my parents live now called Paros. And
so, well, let me ask you something. So while you're sitting in a restaurant in a little, you know, lovely little plaza in some little town, mm-hmm. and you find a meal that you like, what do you do? You literally take a photo of it?
Take a photo, and I always carry a notepad on me. So when I see
something. Stealing.
Well, you're just getting
inspired.
You're not stealing the exact dish, you know. You're just like, you get an inspiration, like, wow, that's a great idea. Like, and then you make it yours, you know.
So give us an example. What was something that you had in one of these little towns? We were like, I didn't think of doing that, but now I'm going to take that and execute it this way.
Like one big one this past summer was like when we're going out to eat the seafood. I think the biggest one that there is just like if you're getting nice product, like don't do too much
to it.
Keep it
simple.
Keep it simple. And I feel like mm-hmm. sometimes a lot of restaurants they kind of go over the top with all these crazy different types of techniques and garnishes for the dish. But at the end of the day, man, it's just food.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to keep it simple. And like for octopus, for example, like in Greece, the octopus comes out of the water and it hits the grill. They put some lemon and parsley and call it a day.
Right.
You know, like simple, but it's all about focusing on the products that you have.
I'm hungry.
I know. I am. What did you bring in today?
Well, today I brought in a little bit of what the kind of the things that we're going to be doing. We're testing all this stuff at Kapnos right now. We're kind of running them as specials mm-hmm. after we're done testing them. So today I'm kind of bringing in some items that we'll be featuring on our shellfish tower. We have some local Rappahannock oysters right now
mm-hmm.
With like a multi-colored peppercorn
mignonette. I think I have heard of them.
Yeah, you got to support the local guys, you know.
Right.
And so we have like some a peppercorn mignonette, which it's just different types of peppercorns. We put some black, green, and pink in there. There's a little bit of red wine vinegar.
Now, what'd you do to the shrimp? Because they look. Are they grilled at all?
They're poached.
Slowly poached.
Yeah, we poached them really slow in olive oil. And then I have some cocktail sauce here.
They're beautiful.
Our cocktail sauce has a little bit of preserved lemon. It's like a traditional cocktail sauce with like the addition mm-hmm. of a little chili, preserved lemon, and caper. And then we also have some bay scallops in the shell, a little bit of grapefruit, green apple, olive oil, and chili. Just like we just like to put our little touches on things. We don't just want to have like some basic mignonette cocktail sauce. We got to have it. I put a little Kapnos twist on them.
All right. Well, so very quickly, tell everybody where they can find you at Kapnos, when they can see you on Top Chef, and when the taverna is opening.
Kapnos is on 14th and W. I'm there pretty much every day. We're only open for dinner on the weekdays, and we're open up for brunch on Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 3.
And we've been for brunch. Brunch is fabulous.
Yeah, well, that kind of, brunch kind of ties back to my Greek diner days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Belgian waffles and like the stone baked eggs and the pork and beans and things like that. And then Kapnos Taverna is probably subjected to open late December, January,
okay.
Pending permitting and construction and things like that. And Top Chef's every Wednesday, so tune in.
All right. Thanks so much. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
We all face challenges, but when you're a child in need, facing those challenges can feel like moving a mountain.
That's why WTOP has helped create a place for the kids.
Join us as we support the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse number 2.
Since 1937, the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse has provided a safe place where kids in our area can learn, explore, and grow.
Visit aplaceforthekids.com or the charity section at WTOP.com to learn about ways that you can help.
Together, we can move mountains.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. George Pagonis just treated us to some great seafood, and now we're going to go back to the boys from Barrel up on Capitol Hill. Parker, Mike, what is the Elixir Bar? I read about it. I couldn't figure it out.
I guess this means we're doing a good job, I guess. Yeah. When we opened, it was a name they gave the basement, and for the first few months, it was really just nothing more than a release valve. If upstairs got really busy, it was a second seating area. Mm-hmm. So we tried to just make it more distinguished in the last month or so, just change the ambiance a little bit, make it a little bit different, play different music, et cetera. And we added a program where, in addition to the cocktails that we have year-round or, a certain amount of time, we do weekly rotators as well now. That the bar staff has been great at kind of, it's their charge. So they invent the cocktails every week. We taste them. They're usually based around a ingredient or flavor.
And they come up with it?
Yeah.
You sort of give them free rein?
Yeah, absolutely. When we started doing it, the email went out to the entire staff. You guys, it's all on you. And they've been really proud about it and taken the initiative. And it's been really nice.
I bet. So how many cocktails do you feature each week?
We said we'd do 2 to 5 because we didn't want to do a hard number and have cocktails that we didn't love on it. Mm-hmm. So the most we've ever had was 6. We broke that rule the first week, and then the least we've ever had was 2.
All right. What did you guys make here?
This is a bijou. This is part of our barrel aging program, actually. So it has a little bit of wood on it. I would say maybe 2 to 3 weeks of wood on it.
Okay.
I'd say. This is a bijou, so gin, green chartreuse, and sweet vermouth with some orange bitters in there.
Is it the chartreuse that gives it that perfumey smell?
Yeah, that very spicy.
It kind of fakes you out, and then you take a sip, and bam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Goodbye. Yeah.
No, it's a lovely drink.
I do have to apologize. I'm not sure what dilution. I'm stirring while you guys are talking is kind of nerve wracking. So I have no idea how strong and or weak.
Am I that forceful a broadcaster that I am? All right. Well, while we're sipping this, let's talk to Kathy Barrow, Mrs. Wheelbarrow, which it turns out is almost a neighbor of ours.
Right.
So your whole thing, you were in marketing, you're a retailer, you were all this stuff, and suddenly you got into preserving and canning. And what happened to you, Kathy?
It wasn't so sudden.
No,
I started preserving it when I was about 5 years old with my great-grandmother. And I did that for quite a while as a kid, sort of as her kitchen slave.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, gave it up because it was so horrible. And then in the 80s, my mom took it up again, and I became her kitchen slave. So I had a lot of experience. But about 5 or 6 years ago, I began to understand the link between eating locally and preserving.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't eat locally year-round if you don't preserve your food.
Right.
You need to think about
living here.
That's right. You need to think about those tomatoes in August and how much you're going to want them in February and put them in jars.
Mm-hmm. But people are, I'm definitely one of them. And I mean, I've read through your book. I think people are scared of canning. You know, there's the process, especially the sterilizing the jars and making sure everything, clicks right. There is a process to it. And I think some people are afraid that first time just to, make a mistake.
There are two aspects to preserving. One is the cooking, and one is the science part, the preserving part. In the last year, the Ball Jar Company, which makes most of the jars that are used in the U.S., has come up with some new processes that say you no longer need to sterilize or sanitize those jars. So they've taken out a whole step. So you don't need to worry about that. It
now,
used to
how
be
do
this
you feel
whole
about
thing.
That? Do you think it's accurate?
I think it's absolutely accurate.
Okay.
If your jars are in the processor for 10 minutes at 212 degrees, they're getting pretty darn sterilized. So
okay.
I don't worry about it.
You don't worry about it anymore.
Right.
All right. So as you took this from your grandmother and your mother, but I mean, you have this 500 page book. I mean, that's more than jams and jellies. How did you get in? How did you go further than the classics?
I started thinking about what we used every day and how much I was buying in the grocery store that was not made locally or grown locally.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to replicate that grocery store in my own pantry. So for many items, like those tomatoes that we talked about, I realized I was using 2 or 3 cans of tomatoes a week between soups and stews and pasta sauce.
I go through so many tomatoes a week. I do.
Right. So now I put up about 400 pounds of tomatoes every summer, and that takes us through the whole year.
All right, but let's talk about the person, maybe the apartment dweller in his or her 30s, who isn't going to get that into it. What do they do?
I say make the thing that you love the most. If you're crazy for dill pickles, or if you think apricot jam is just the be-all and end-all, or if you go through a lot of ricotta, or you love bacon, learn to make that one thing. And then what happens is you become really enamored of the process, and how delicious the food is. It's just so much more delicious when you make it locally and yourself. You can control it.
Let's talk about the fact, I mean, in your book, you talk about preserving meat and fish. Mm-hmm. You do talk about making cheese. How does that, for those who don't understand the process, how do you fold that into your book? Yes.
Well, let's think about pancetta. Mm-hmm. My husband's a vegetarian, which is, of course, what we call a mixed marriage in my household. And because of that, I was, I like a little bit of meat on my table and on my plate. And so instead of doing two covers a night, I could make one dinner and then garnish with a little pancetta. Mm-hmm. Rather than buy that, I'd rather make it myself and know what's in it and how, you know, have it there. It's just another way to preserve. It's preserving meat. Mm-hmm. And the same with cheese. It's preserving dairy. So I'm making ricotta, mascarpone, sour cream, cream cheese, camembert.
I mean, when you say it like that, you're right. It is preserving, but I don't think of it in the same category.
Preserving is a huge umbrella. I mean, it also includes fermenting and dehydrating and freezing. You know, things I haven't even covered in this book.
Well, when you say freezing, how would you incorporate the freezing with vegetables or fruits or whatever? How do you do that?
Well, this fall, one of the farmers that I work with a lot said, we have an abundance of broccoli. Our broccoli crop was just amazing. I bought 15 pounds of broccoli.
Okay.
And there's two of us in the house. We're not going to go through that in a week. But I blanched it all and froze it on sheet pan so it's individually frozen and put it in bags in the freezer. So I have broccoli ready.
Your own bird's eye.
You're so lazy. Why don't you?
I feel really lazy right
so now. So what about the beginner? Can the beginner pick up this book and go, oh, yeah, man, I can
absolutely
do this?
I wrote this for the beginner, and then I created recipes for people who've done it for a while. So you start simple, and then you can be, you know, make it more complicated as you become interested. And I also focused on recipes using what you preserve. I tell this story a lot, but a friend of mine got into canning, and she called me one January and said, I have 58 jars of jam, and nobody in this house eats toast.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, well, here are the things you can do with it. Like the rúgula that I brought today is made with my jam. Mm-hmm. I make a barbecue sauce with jam. I do pan sauces for chicken breasts.
Sure.
So there are a million ways to use it. It's not just for toast.
No, I mean, there's so much more.
That was what was
here.
Really important to me, was show people how to use what they've got.
And how did you do your research on that? I mean, was it just a lot of trial and error, or was it just clearly things you were doing in your house?
Every recipe in this book are things that I've been making for a very long time.
Okay.
What was hard was making them and actually measuring, because I was not that kind of cook. And, you know, to write a book, you have to measure. You have to see how long things take. You have to make sure that it works out the same every time.
Right.
That's
hard
work. So tell me about this.
Yes.
Yes. I brought a little bottle of my homemade plum brandy, which is called Slivovitz. And I wrote a recipe for the Washington Post a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's really one of my favorite little libations. And it goes well with cookies.
It does go well. All right. So
and it's not
brandy-ish
at all. It's not, I mean, very light.
It's really just infused. It's Italian prune plums and a cinnamon stick and a little sugar and a lot of vodka and some thyme.
But it doesn't taste like a lot of vodka at all.
Well, yeah, have two or three.
Well, but you are slurring.
You're slurring
your speech. Vodka.
And do you do a lot of that?
I love to make infusions. Yeah, I always have strange little bottles of things in the bottom of the guest room.
Do you sell
closet.
This commercially? Or
no,
you
I
just,
don't.
You just
I don't
do it
sell
for
anything.
Friends.
You don't sell anything commercially. No. Do you have any interest in going that route?
I really don't. I love writing. That's really what makes me happy. I hope to do another cookbook and continue to write for all the wonderful outlets that have employed me up to now.
Well, let's tell everybody where they can find Mrs. Wheelbarrow's Practical Pantry.
Well, all the online outlets, of course, Politics and Prose here in D.C. And Kramer's. Also, La Cuisine in Alexandria are all carrying it. And
are you doing any local book signing?
I am. I'll be at the Proper Topper on Wednesday. And then this afternoon, there's a big event for Les Dames d'Escoffier.
At
Elo Day Spa on Wisconsin Avenue in Georgetown from 3 to 6. And I'll be there.
Nikki's not allowed to go to Elo, but
I'll be there with Carla Hall, Bonnie Benwick, Aviva Goldfarb, Domenico Marchetti.
All of our alumni.
Exactly. Everybody who's been on the show.
All the local D.C. Doms. Yes, it's going to be a great event.
Yeah, I bet it is. It will be terrific.
Thank you so much. All right. Well, Jordan,
Get
Jordan Harrison here.
George, we're going to kick you out.
George, you're out of here. Leave your food, but get off the mic. All right. So I, Jordan, honest to God, I don't know why, but I never really took a good hard look at your kind of resume background. You're a home run
hitter.
Because
I put the show together and he doesn't.
I guess so. So I just want to, you know, I mean, first of all, Virginia wines are getting a great national reputation that, you know, years ago you might have been hard to imagine. And here you are. You come into Tarara and with some resume. I'm just going to read real fast. You made three of the first seven Virginia wines that ever got 90-point ratings from Wine Enthusiast, right?
Yeah.
And last year you made Wine Enthusiast 40 Under 40 Tastemakers issue, which is not bad for a guy in Loudoun County against everybody else in the country.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
All right. Well, you're not going to ask for money to come on the show, are you?
Well, I mean, we'll do this one for free.
All right, do this one for free. So, you know, we've got a couple of minute and a half before we go. Talk about your background. You're out of Canada originally, right?
Yeah, yeah. I started out, actually, I started in the restaurant industry and learned pretty quickly that that wasn't going to work for my sort of lifestyle. And I wanted to, I just wanted to really concentrate on family and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to get into a 9-to-5, which I didn't end up doing.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it was kind of silly. I ended up going back to school, and I thought I was going to go back to be a sommelier. But it goes to show I wasn't very good at school that I didn't even apply for the right program. So I showed up, and they told me to go to chemistry. I was like, why do I have to do that? That's silly. And it turned out that I applied for enology and viticulture and just fell in love with the whole process of growing grapes and making
wine. How'd you do in chemistry?
Actually, I ended up doing okay just because I found this sort of passion for it. I hadn't taken any sciences since grade 10 and just, you know, turned out to love it. So,
well, when did you actually start working at the vineyards and mixing the wines?
Yeah, so when I graduated from Niagara College in Canada, they kept me on there to work with their teaching winery to teach new students coming in as their winemaker. So I made some wine there and then moved on to a much larger winery because I was getting some attention, and this was a new startup that had opened or was opening up. So they hired me as their initial winemaker for this giant cooperative that was doing 1.6 million cases.
Hmm.
So that was kind of what really got me rolling, and then I just decided it wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to get back into more small, hands-on winemaking as opposed to hanging out behind a computer winemaking.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk about what you're doing at Tarara these days. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hello, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to our friend Jordan Harris, who is the celebrated winemaker at Tarara Winery in Loudoun County. You feel celebrated?
Some days, my wife tries to make me not feel that way sometimes.
Yeah,
oh, I'm sure.
Well,
she
that's
does
marriage,
it.
Baby.
I'm sure she does that intentionally.
Listen up there, George. So the Boneyard Club. We talked about it. I think it was just last time you were on. It was just kind of coming together. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Boneyard was this kind of cool thing that we just decided to work on because Tarara, it's far more a classic style of production, you know, showcasing the terroir and where the grapes come from. Boneyard is a little bit more experimental where we can reach out and kind of do some cool things. So we do, you know, orange wines, which is just white wines
which
fermented on its skins.
Right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a huge trend nationally.
Absolutely. So, you know, longer barrel aged Syrahs and, you know, playing with just more interesting varieties that aren't really all over the place. Just trying to sort of push the envelope. So we've come up with these packs of the wines, essentially, which is just all of them where, you know, you join the club and just sort of, you know, taste your way through some really cool experiments that we've been working on.
But as the winemaker, like when you started with the orange wines, for example, is that something that your members sort of just trust you on? I mean, how do you educate people on that? I mean, like in D.C., it's a big trend. A lot of restaurants are starting to carry it. But there was a real education curve on that. So since you have such an incredible membership, how do you educate your members on these wines? Or are they ahead of the trend?
Well, I mean, people that are coming out to wineries tend to be ahead of the trend in the first place because they're making it their, you know, idea of leisure to come out to a winery. So they definitely have that passion already. But a lot of it does require educating, you know, what we're doing and where we're going with it. So it's really trying to be an open book. You know, I try to be there with our customers more than, say, a larger corporate style winery is going to be able to do so that I can talk about the wines. And then just, you know, showing them notes, showing everything that we possibly can, trying to get them within our email list so that they can see what's coming out and what we did with it. And a lot of them, they do have a trust factor with me because I'm a huge fan of don't make anything that you don't love yourself because you're just not going to do it that well in this industry. So if they have a similar palate to mine by liking the wines, they tend to trust me.
Well, so now you have something called Killer Cluster.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, Killer Cluster was, well, there's the seven words that you're not allowed to use on radio. That's why
there
it's
are?
Cluster.
Okay.
So the whole idea.
I really didn't get that until you just said it, Jordan.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Can someone pass me a fork?
So it was one of those things where we got great recognition with both Tarara and Boneyard. So our demand just went through the roof, and it takes a long time to get your vineyards on stream. So we essentially ran out of supply and said, well, do we close for 6 months a year or what do we do? And I said, you know, I absolutely love grapes and wines from Washington State as well. So we decided to make some stuff that isn't meant to compete or really be part of Tarara or Boneyard. But it was, you know, it killed us a little inside to go outside of Virginia at first, and it was a giant cluster kind of thing. So that's where it all came from. That's where the name came from. So now we bring in, you know, some cool varieties that just don't work here because everywhere has their own thing. So, you know, I'm a huge Rhone fan, so it was great to make some Mourvèdre and Grenache and also playing with some of the Alsatian varieties, Riesling, Gewürztraminer, things like that. So it was just kind of taking what sucked at first and then lifting up, saying, you know, this is a neat opportunity to play with some cool
vineyards. Well, gives you and I a chance to
turning
play.
Lemons into lemonade,
yeah.
Is what you say.
Right.
All right, so we got about 90 seconds. Let's talk about the holidays because I imagine that's a great, basically, internet order operation where we can send great wines to people, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can order wines. Essentially, they'll get shipped to you prior to Christmas. You should get them if you order them before this Wednesday. You know, I can't control FedEx and UPS and all that. So pretty much the 18th, 19th is your last time to kind of get online and get that
wine
order.
Will you put like different packs together for people?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got, you know, the Boneyard pack. We have our Vine Club pack. And then we do some library wines and verticals of different wines, which is just kind of fun. So there's all sorts of packs that you can get within our website. And if there's anything that you just absolutely want that you know we make, just call us and we're pretty easygoing and we can put something together, certainly.
Right. All right, thanks so much. All right, tell people where they...
Yeah, let's find them online and where they can find you online.
Yeah, best bet is www.tarara.com, and you can pretty much get everything there.
So. Awesome.
Great, thanks, Jordan.
Thank you.
All right.
See you in a week. All right, let's go back to the barrel, guys. Mike and Parker, you guys have a kitchen there, and you're serving a lot of good food. We haven't talked about that yet. Give us an overview of the menu.
I was going to say that's probably going to be the great tragedy today because the food, we're real proud of the food.
Well, you didn't bring any in. That's a great tragedy because I'm cheap, remember?
Yeah.
Because you're not here.
Our executive chef is Garrett Fleming, who opened the pig and also went to the CIA. He's worked around Charleston up here, and he makes really, really outstanding food, and the reception's been fantastic.
So give us an idea of what's on the menu.
The idea when we opened was going to be kind of low country. I hate that term, but like Southern fat boy food. But a lot of his sort of more...
I love Southern fat boy food.
Me too.
That's why she married one. Hey.
But a lot of his more like European, French, and Italian tendencies have come out. So we have three handmade pastas now that are fresh made every day. You see a lot of like we have a blood sausage, just very classic French preparation on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that sits right next to the fried chicken, mac and cheese, fried pork chop sandwich that... You know, hamburger that...
Fried pork chop sandwich.
You can get cranked and die of cholesterol all in the same meal. Yeah. Awesome.
I was skinny in June.
Yeah?
So,
so was
I've
he.
Only worked there for 5 months.
Boy, marriages. I don't know. Remember, we're on the radio.
I
so
know.
You're telling. All right, so how many total bourbons, whiskeys, ryes are on the menu there?
It fluctuates, but it's between 130, 150. At any given time, all depending on availability.
Do you guys do classes or anything? I mean, if somebody walks in and they don't know spit one way or the other, aside
how
from
knowledgeable
getting...
are the guys behind the bar?
Says
I mean, is it just the
says
two
Parker,
of you?
Except for him.
The bar.
Yeah, they're pretty good. very good. We're tinkering. We're toying with the idea of doing some classes. I have a request in. Actually, I think we're going to do a first one for this lady whose husband really wants to do it for his birthday. But as far as walk-ins go, these guys are great behind the bar. Walking people through the menu, giving suggestions.
I mean, do you do a lot of training? I mean, with that many, I mean, it must be hard.
It's hard. It is pretty
to
intensive
know all about
because
it.
You can only really taste a new server on, you know, 8 or 10 at one time before it becomes.
Before they die, right?
Yeah, or it just becomes useless.
Or before it's just a party.
Right. Their tongue is just like burnt and everything tastes the same. It's like tasting wine. You know, how many can you really do before it's pointless? So it takes a while and it's.
I think you can do more wines than you can bourbon.
Yeah, probably.
For sure. Well, you certainly tried.
There's definitely a threshold, though. So, I mean, we it's a long process, but we do pretty well. They do a good job.
All right. Please tell everybody where you are, and then quickly tell us what you're pouring next.
Okay, we're at 613 Pennsylvania Avenue,
southeast.
Yeah, in the old 18th Amendment location, right next to Hank's.
Mm-hmm.
And then he invented this drink, so I'll let him talk about it.
This one is the Necromancer number 2. It's our house take on a Corpse Reviver.
Excuse me,
number
what?
Two?
The Corpse Reviver?
Oh, it's our house take on a Corpse Reviver number 2.
Okay.
We call it a Necromancer number 2.
Okay.
Essentially, what you guys are getting right now is actually not quite the full drink.
This won't revive a corpse.
Yeah. Go ahead and smell that, and then we're going to pass something around. That is a smoke-rinsed mason jar.
Mm-hmm.
The smoke, I believe that's actually hickory smoke. Sometimes we'll use apple wood. We smoke the mason jar, so when you smell it, the first thing you're going to see is the smoke plus the rosemary, two really strong aromatic elements, plus a really light, really nice cocktail.
I tried smoking a mason jar in college. It didn't work. Just saying. I don't know how you got it to work, but we tried hard.
We tried. Yeah, we a lot of research.
All right.
So that's it. We got a short show today. If you're out there listening... And you damn well better be. Everything you heard about on the show today and a lot more you can find on Nikki's website, thelistareyouonit.com.
Mm-hmm.
Follow her on Twitter. Listen to her today at 12:40 on WTOP 103.5 FM and on every other Thursday at 12:10.
Yes, very good. Congratulations.
And all that. I had all that bourbon, too.
I know.
It's amazing. And that's all I got to say.
Well, next week we have a fantastic show. The guys from Le Diplomat are coming in. They are rolling in their champagne cart.
Is William coming in?
William is coming
in,
and their champagne expert to pour some champagne. And the new Met, it's a Boston restaurant. It's opened up in Bethesda. We're going to hear all about that. And have you heard about Equity Eats? They are funding a lot of new restaurants in D.C. They're going to come in and tell us how they're doing it. So we want to thank all of our guests for joining us today. It was a really fast, great show, but thank you all for joining us.
It was an alcohol-infused event.
Good oysters and some excellent arugula. It was all good. So we want to thank you all for joining us today. Everybody, please have a delicious week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics, Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.
The following is a special presentation of Federal News Radio and George Washington University.
Savage spins past him right down the lane. And dunks that! Keithan Savage, the one-handed thunder jam. 30-29, George Washington.
Reverse layup is good for Joe McDonald.
40-34, George Washington. What a move from Joe Mack, 22.
Back to Larson, double team. Passes it through to Guarino. Reverse layup, good! And the foul. How about the soft touch by Larson on that pass? 59-58, George Washington, and and-one is coming up.
This is George Washington Colonials Basketball on Federal News Radio. Brought to you by RCN, by GEICO, by Domino's Pizza, by Marriott Hotels, by Quality Tours Transport and DC Trails, by SVM, by Tonic Restaurant, by the Washington Post, and by Xerox Copiers.
George Washington defeats number 20 Creighton 60-53. George Washington defeats Rhode Island 69-56. And the George Washington Colonials have defeated for the first time ever the VCU Rams. Final score, George Washington 76 and VCU 66.
The Colonials are ready for game time, and we're just minutes away from the opening tip. But first, with today's pregame show, here's the voice of GW Basketball, Byron Kerr.
From the Bryce Jordan Center on the campus of Penn State University, the George Washington Colonials on the road, taking on the Big Ten's Penn State Nittany Lions. Welcome inside Section 122. We are on the concourse level here to provide the play-by-play for you today with the Colonials facing off against another one-loss team. They took care of DePaul, who was 6-1 on Thursday, 81-68. Now they try to foil the nice start of Penn State. The Nittany Lions are 9-1 under Patrick Chambers this season, and they have won seven straight games. The Colonials also are on a win streak. They have won three straight and four of their last five, including an 81-68 victory over DePaul on Thursday. Outstanding performances for Patricio Guarino with 19. Kevin Larson and Joe McDonald each had 18 in the victory. Colonials led by 20 at half time, 42-22, and held on from there. And now they look to try to even their record on the road, facing off against this Penn State squad. They already have defeated Rutgers on the road, but lost to Seton Hall away from home and UVA. So the Colonials trying to also get into this little bit of a mini break before they head off to the Diamond Head Classic in Honolulu with another victory, feeling good about themselves, and they're playing some really good basketball right now. So it should be an outstanding challenge tonight and today against the Penn State Nittany Lions here at University Park. The Nittany Lions just had their last win against Duquesne, 64-62, on December 10th. They have DJ Newbill, a talented senior out of Philadelphia. He averages 22 points a game, and a talented point guard, a freshman from Chester, Pennsylvania, named Shep Garner, 10.5 points a game. It's a guard-oriented Patrick Chambers squad, so the Colonials will have to worry about the dribble penetration of this team in order to have some success today. The crowd is still filing in. A holiday festive atmosphere here at Penn State. Should be an outstanding matchup. We're glad you're alongside. We'll preview the Nittany Lions and get Michael Onergan's thoughts during the pregame show as it continues here live from the Bryce Jordan Center in Penn State University's University Park. It's the Colonials and the Nittany Lions next on the Colonials Radio Network.
Experience GW Women's Basketball with a family four-pack that includes four tickets and four $6 concession vouchers for only $40. Enjoy affordable fun for the whole family while GW takes on local teams Maryland, Georgetown, and George Mason. Call 202-99-GW-TICKS or visit gwsports.com/tickets to raise high the buff and blue today.
Residence Inn by Marriott Foggy Bottom. Come experience our innovative, luxurious, upscale extended stay hotel in the heart of beautiful historic Foggy Bottom. Situated on GW's campus and adjacent to Foggy Bottom Metro, the hotel is minutes from Georgetown's premier shopping and restaurants. All suites are one bedroom with fully equipped kitchens and generous accommodations. GW fans will experience complimentary daily buffet breakfast, midweek social hour, and stay connected with Wi-Fi, offering GW fans a 20% discount. Plug in code GWU at Marriott.com. It's not a room, it's a residence.
Wow.
Geico's been saving people money for over 75 years.
75 years? Fancy that.
My dearest wife, do you possess knowledge about Geico, making it feasible for society to spend less capital on automobile insurance for over 75 years?
Why are you talking like that?
We said fancy that, so I was just fancying it.
Geico, saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years.
Experience the power of physical therapy. NovaCare Rehabilitation knows the importance of an active lifestyle. If you're injured, we will bring that back to you. NovaCare is the preferred provider of physical therapy to the George Washington Colonials. For all your on-campus needs or a center nearest you, request an appointment today at NovaCare.com or call 1-800-770-NOVA. That's 1-800-770-6682. The Colonials choose NovaCare, so can you. Experience the power of physical therapy.
Welcome back to Penn State. George Washington taking on the Penn State Nittany Lions today. The Colonials are 6-2. They've won 3 in a row and are 1-2 away from home. Penn State is 9-1. They have won 7 straight overall and are 5-0 here at the Bryce Jordan Center. DJ Newbill, we talked about him. He's a 6'4 senior from Strawberry Mansion, the same high school that Maurice Rice went. You remember George Washington star from the mid-2000s. Newbill averages 22 points and 6 rebounds per game. Brandon Taylor, also a power forward at 6'6", junior from Tabernacle, New Jersey, averages 10 points and 6 rebounds. Ross Travis, also a big man, 6'7", senior from Chaska, Minnesota, averages 5.5 points and 7.7 rebounds. He's the leading rebounder for the Nittany Lions. Shep Garner is the freshman point guard, 6'1", from Chester, Pennsylvania, averages 10.5 points per game. And Jordan Dickerson, they have been starting the 7-footer the last 3 games and have had some success. He's 7'1", 245-pound junior from Brooklyn, New York, averaging 2.3 points and 3.2 rebounds a game. And that'll be a matchup that Kevin Larson will be tasked against. And, of course, John Capriva is going to have to do a nice job against Ross Travis, who's 235 pounds. The Colonials, though, have had some nice outings recently. Patricio Guarino is on a hot streak. He is one shy of getting to the 9th spot in the top 10 in steals in George Washington history, averaging 2.8 per game, averaging 15.1 points per game. That's the leading score. And Keithan Savage is averaging 12.8 points a game. Also, Joe McDonald is averaging 6.6 rebounds and Kevin Larson 6.5 rebounds for the Colonials. The guards and the forwards will have to rebound well against Penn State. What a matchup. Penn State 9-1, George Washington 6-2. Coach Mike Lonergan has his thoughts on Penn State as we count down to tip here live from University Park in the Bryce Jordan Center on the campus of Penn State University. This is Colonials Radio Network.
GW is proud to have Quality Tours and DC Trails as the primary transportation provider of the Colonials. Quality Tours and DC Trails delivers state-of-the-art coaches and excellent customer service for all your group's transportation needs. Quality Tours and DC Trails offers an array of tour travel and sightseeing ventures in the Mid-Atlantic region, local or long distance. Quality Tours and DC Trails can be reached at 703-339-0333 or through their director of sales, Kirk Rich, at krich@qualitytour.com.
Wow, Geico's been saving people money for over 75 years.
75 years? Are you joking?
No, they've been around so long that the Dead Sea was still alive. Geico's been around so long that rainbows were still black and white. They've been around so long that kids rode the school horse to school.
I thought you said you weren't joking.
Well, I wasn't joking about the 75 years.
Geico, saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years.
RCN is a proud sponsor of Colonials basketball. When you come home to RCN, you don't come home to a fully stocked fridge or free maid service for your dorm. Sorry about that. But you do experience hundreds of your favorite channels and a hometown provider that supports GW Athletics. They've got their best minds working on the fridge and maid service. But in the meantime, enjoy their extensive VOD library with RCN exclusive TiVo Premier Box or super high-speed internet and digital phone service. They're your hometown team. Go Colonials.
2014-15 season tickets are still on sale for GW Women's Basketball. Catch 15 exciting games in the Charles E. Smith Center, including non-conference clashes with Maryland and Georgetown, and A-10 matchups against Duquesne, Dayton, Fordham, and St. Joseph's. Call 202-99-GW-TICKS. That's 202-994-9849. Or visit gwsports.com/tickets to raise high with GW Women's Basketball this season.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Keith the Savage. You're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 and 820 AM, the home of George Washington basketball.
Welcome back to the Bryce Jordan Center. Byron Kerr with Mike Lonergan from George Washington University before today's game against Penn State. And Coach, a look back at the win over DePaul. Very impressive efforts for Patricio Guarino, Kevin Larson, Joe McDonald, all playing very well. Got off to a little bit of a slow start offensively in that game, but you guys really took it to him at the end of the first half, and that set the tone for the second half.
Yeah, our guys played great. We did a great job at our intensity level. Our defense was terrific. And, you know, besides poor free throw shooting, I thought it was maybe our best 40-minute performance of the season.
And you really needed that because you're matching up now with a Big Ten team on the road against Penn State here on an early game on a Sunday afternoon. Does that change things a little bit, playing a noon game on a Sunday? And how does your trip go coming up here?
Yeah, it doesn't change too much. Just go to bed a little earlier last night and make sure the guys are well rested. I actually like playing instead of waiting around for these night games. Right. But we're excited about coming here. You know, Penn State's having a terrific season. They got four starters back from, you know, a team last year that swept Ohio State and show signs of improvement. So they're 9-1 and you know, I think they're undefeated at home. So you know, should be a good matchup, and we're gonna have to play well to get a road victory.
One of the most prolific scorers in the NCAAs is DJ Newbill, averaging 22 a game, had a down game against Duquesne. And also they have a very talented freshman point guard in Shep Garner. Some pretty good guys in the backcourt for Patrick Chambers.
Yeah, definitely. Garner was a big recruit for them out of Philly. And, you know, Newbill is definitely one of the best scorers in the country. He's strong. He can shoot threes. He really creates a matchup problem. And he's got the green light, you know, the ultimate green light. So those guys that are allowed to shoot early and often, they're really difficult to guard. So we've been blessed with a very good defender in Patricio Guarino, but it's really going to be our whole team that has to focus on keeping Newbill in check today.
A couple of good rebounders. Newbill's one of them, but also Brandon Taylor, who averages 6, and Ross Travis, who's 6'7", averages 7'7". You talked about how important John Capriva was to rebounding. Your guards have done a nice job, but you want to make sure you get them just one shot per or less per possession.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest key of this game. John's going to have to get his rebounds up, and Kevin and our guards do a good job, but you know, I think whoever controls the backboards today, you know, will win this game, and we've been working on that. We know it's a big, you know, a big issue. We just got to with how good our guards rebound, our bigs got to rebound, and especially at the four positions. So Taylor, Travis, they're terrific rebounders. So we're going to do some things defensively to try to put ourselves in good position to have five guys, you know, close to the basket where we can rebound as a team.
And speaking of your bigs, real critical that Kevin Larson had such a nice game against DePaul to gain some confidence and get back to the way he was playing at the end of last year.
Yeah, he's had three good games. You know, the UMBC game was big, you know, even though it was a lower-level opponent after he really struggled in the first four or five games, whatever it was. And, you know, he had a good game then, but then Charlotte had, you know, quality big guys. He played well then, and it carried over into the DePaul game. So he's just got to keep being consistent. He's refocused now, and he's posting up inside, and that's what we need. We need an inside presence from him, really, at both ends of the court. So we're a much better team, you know, with Kevin. At Seton Hall was tough. He had 3 points, but I think that was a wake-up call for him.
Been working with Keith, and you know, a 1-for-9 is not really normal for him. He's been working very hard on controlling his game out there.
Yeah, you know, he's just tried to do too much sometimes, but you know, looking back at that film, he probably missed 3 shots he normally makes. But I'm trying to get him to get his assists up, same with Yuta and Patricio. You know, if they all share the basketball, we'll really be unguardable. But sometimes you try to do too much, but I don't want to take away the aggressiveness of Keith and Savage. That's his biggest strength. So you just hope some of those shots fall, and you know, he's got to stop turning the ball over. I'm more concerned with that. I think he had 6 turnovers against DePaul.
And Patrick Chambers, of course, a disciple of Jay Wright at Villanova. You were working very hard on that